fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you for coming on. I mean, we've tried to reschedule a few times and here we are today. You're so busy.
Yeah, I know. I think this is like the third time I'm joining you, right? It's really cool. I love coming on again because we get to kind of reconnect on different parts of my journey. And yes, thank you for your flexibility. For the audience, I've rescheduled a million times with Ken. It's been a busy season, Ken.
Yeah, and congratulations. I mean, there's so many things that I'd like to get in to with you. You know, from the CEO of Whole Foods coming by, you getting married, the brand appearing in all of these big box stores. These are all huge milestones. They're all fascinating to me.
Oh my gosh, yes. I'm happy to like dive in the BTS because candidly, I feel like when I first started, I was sharing a lot of the BTS on social media. But in recent years, like I just feel so busy that where it's like I feel myself disconnected from sharing the BTS with my community online. And it's not that I don't want to share. I simply just don't have the mental, emotional bandwidth sometimes, Ken. So happy to dive into it. Yeah. So for folks that don't know, I'm a newlywed. I don't know how long you can say that, but I got married last year, last June. So last year was a very big year for me. We launched nationwide with Whole Foods. At the same time, I was preparing a wedding. And then myself and my partner, Eric, we got married in June. And that was just such a special time for me. I'd say that was the first time in my whole life, really, a working life, where I was off for 2 straight weeks, right?
Wow.
Yeah, like I was literally just like off, mentally checked out. I didn't check my emails. And it took a good amount of prep with my team for me to be able to be in that position of like, you know, transitioning a lot of responsibilities, looping people in months in advance, and then just having like a nice system of like, I'm off, I'm not checking emails or comms, but if you need me, you can reach me through text, right, for emergencies. And no one ever reached out, which was great. And that was, I must say, it was like a net new feeling for me to be so present in something so personal to my life, because I feel like for so much of my life, like work dominates. So that was a very special time. Yeah. We just celebrated our 1 year.
Interesting. Yeah, it's interesting you led with that because, you know, that's a very kind of personal space that you share quite a bit on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I think what you know, sharing those private moments is hard for my generation, for somebody like, you know, and I wonder the idea behind sharing that much is so powerful. Mm-hmm. What keeps you sharing sort of these personal stories?
You know, it's funny you say that. In my mind, I feel like I don't share enough of the personal stories. Yeah, I was actually thinking about it recently because like we had just celebrated our 1 year wedding anniversary. And I was thinking like, I should do a whole 1 year recap. And I don't think I did the whole wedding spam or like not enough in my mind. I was like, I should walk people through the whole process because a year ago when I was going through it, I felt really present and I didn't really feel like sharing on social media. I shared snippets, but I felt like I didn't share the full story. This year I was like, oh, I should share it now. But then I just never did it. I never got around to it. But it's funny, like your perspective and my perspective, I feel like I'm not sharing enough. But when I do share, I do have moments in my mind where it's like, I have a little less time for social media these days, but I do find myself trying to be aware of when I do share, how much of it is related to work, to the hustle, to the grind, and how much of it is to everything else in my life. Because I'm pretty mindful of like not wanting to just over glorify the work. And I want to be able to show myself in all of my multitudes as a human, as a creative, as a silly person, as a partner, as a daughter, as a sister, as someone who loves to party and drink and work. Like I think there are moments where I do want to try to share the non-work sides of me just so that other people who are looking or maybe like taking note, they just understand that like life is not just about work. Like, yes, I work a lot, but at the end of the day, like your life is not your work. You are not defined by your work. You're not defined by your titles. And And just trying to, like, you know, share, have this idea of, like, representation in, like, our fullest multitudes, you know? So for those moments, I try to share snippets of my personal life.
Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information.
How has 1 year of being married changed your life? And has it changed? Is it any different?
I would say that the first year being married has been a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it. I don't know if it's changed my life dramatically. I'd say that I'm still very engaged with work, where, you know, we're going through a really intense growth period. So work is still very demanding. I would say on the personal tip, it has kind of felt like a catalyst for me to think a little bit more long term with my personal life. Whereas in the past, my future mind was always thinking about work in the business and the growth path for the business and what does the next 1, 2, 3, 5 years looks like. But I wasn't really having that same framework for my personal life. The person I was very much like, we're here, we're rolling, we're having a good time. And, you know, with my partner, Eric's, before we got married, we had been together for like 7 years. So there is a bit of like, we're in this groove, right? There's a level of comfort there. So when we got married, I felt like it really sparked some future thinking for myself and for Eric's, where it's like, let's be intentional about what we're doing here together. Okay, we're present with each other, but like, what do we actually want our lives to look like in the future? So I'd say like getting married and kind of like getting into that flow has sparked a little bit more future planning for us.
You know, that's a really good point that you've hit on, because I feel like millennials and Gen Z are thinking less about marriage and long-term because they're pursuing careers. They're pursuing things that are tangible to their bank account, right? And for you to bring that up, I've kind of held this belief, as the previous generation, is that life starts when we do get married and we have the kids, because then that long-term planning begins to happen. So I'm hearing it exactly from your mouth today, that when we plan for the long road and we're intentional about the partner that we're with, it changes the chemistry of our long-term plans.
Yeah. I mean, I can speak for myself that I think for me, I've always felt like my sense of identity and fulfillment was through the work I create in the world or the value that I create in the world. And for me, because I have such an entrepreneurial DNA, that fulfillment or sense of like self and identity was through work versus through being in a relationship. And, you know, different people prioritize different things. Some people prioritize family more than work, which is like totally respectable. But for myself, I do think I was like on this like deep journey of like me and like the value that I want to create in the world. Yeah. And now I'm also starting to understand that like my partner and my partnership, my relationship is a really big part of that journey. Because I can honestly say that, you know, through my relationship with Eric's, like, I felt like I've become a better person and I feel like I've become a better version of myself. And I feel, you know, he's a supporter of me. He's a champion of me. So a lot of ways he's helped me expand myself as a person, which translates to the work that I do.
That's so beautiful. He's a beautiful person inside and out.
Yeah. No, inside and out. Yeah.
Inside and out. So before we get to how the CEO of Whole Foods got there, I'd like to get into your landing inside of all these big box store chains. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about that? And can you tell me which stores you got to and how that these things happened?
Yeah, for sure. So I'll start with our biggest one, which was Whole Foods, which was last year in 2023. We had just developed our ready-to-drink cans, right? We had three of these SKUs. We developed these in 2022 and we immediately got a nationwide rollout with Whole Foods Market. So every region of Whole Foods, which is quite unique. So we launched these two products. When we launched these to market, we launched them straight into Whole Foods Market, which is awesome. And how did that happen? I must say, I think it's quite rare for a retailer to launch a product immediately. Normally, retail buyers would like to see a little bit of sales history or traction. But for us, we have been developing a relationship with Whole Foods since like 2019, right?
When you say you're developing a relationship with Whole Foods, what does that even mean?
Well, I would say the first 2 years was probably just me cold emailing them like nonstop, sending them updates, sending them progress reports, sending them, you know, photos from events, sending them a new press clipping, even though they never responded. So this was like a buyer or a forager in the Northeast. Like, even though they never responded, I just kept filling their inbox with updates about us, right? And then eventually, you know, I think around maybe like 2021, somebody finally came to visit us, and it was through like a friend in the network, right? They had connected us, and because when people see you doing your thing and consistently doing your thing, creating value, I think eventually someone will kind of be like, hey, I'm paying attention to you. Like, I want to help you get to the next like stepping stone. So by 2021, we had some Whole Foods leaders like visit us at our roastery in Brooklyn. And then by 2022, we launched our packaged coffee beans. So 3 SKUs of our beans in Whole Foods, New York. So it just started out with one state. And then from there, just continue to develop our relationship with the buyers. And then those buyers would maybe talk to the buyers in the RTD category or like other parts of the company. So we just started really developing like a relationship with them. And it really started like in 2019. So it was years in the making. By the time, you know, so in 2022, our beans were in Whole Foods New York, right? So I had a relationship with the regional buyer there, right? And in 2022, we had started to develop our ready-to-drink, our cans, right? So as we're developing this, I'm like informing our buyers, our relationships, we have a new product in the pipeline, right? And then that buyer is like, oh, this is interesting. They share it with their colleagues. And then before you know it, I'm connected to the buyer for the RTD coffee and tea category at Whole Foods Global, which is like the nationwide office versus regional. And then we start that conversation, and then I'm keeping them updated on our development, on our flavor SKUs. I'm sending them photos of what our packaging looks like. And then by the time we develop our first sample, sent it over to them. And because they have their own like category review schedule as well. So like for our category of RTD coffees, like they're reviewing in like November, December, right? We've been working this all year. So by the time our product was done, sent to the samples, they knew that we were developing this. So maybe they were considering if there was space or not. And fortunately, there was space. And so by the end of 2022, this was finalized. And then we launched it in January 2023.
You know, the key to all of this is that you mentioned for years just cold emailing them.
Yeah.
And you brought up, so that's like, I think the most important thing. And then the second thing that I caught was eventually when people see that you're on your game, mm-hmm. and you're doing your thing, mm-hmm. that it will sort of raise awareness within that company, and then they'll reach out. But the faith to keep going for those years of cold emailing and keeping the hope alive, that I think is the space where all of us are who have not gotten to that sort of point in life, where sometimes it's 2 years, 3 years, 5 years of screenwriting or of, you know, wanting to be a film director or a podcaster or whatever till things pick up. Where do you find the deep faith to keep going?
Mm. Gosh, such a great question. I'd say two things come to mind. The first part of your question of like, where do I find that deep faith to keep going is, you know, that is rooted back into my mission, my North Star, what I believe is my purpose in this path, which is to help to elevate Vietnamese coffee growers, communities, culture in America, right? And anyone who knows our work understands kind of like the long mission behind that. Like, that is my North Star. I deeply feel compelled and called to that mission. So for that reason, I'm going to keep going, right? I should clarify that pure will and like tenacity and resilience, those are very important traits, but just pure will is not enough. Yeah. It's not enough to just be like, I have an amazing idea and I believe deeply in my idea and I believe that everyone else should believe in my idea. Like, that's only part of it. If you are truly trying to create value in the world, you have to think about, where does your belief and your mission and your desire for value intersect with other people's desire for value, right? So in this path, it's yes, my resilience and my tenacity keep going, but it's also constantly listening and learning to better understand, how do we create the win-win here, right? The win-win, so let's say in the example of Whole Foods Market, I have something that I believe is valuable. I have a product that I believe is differentiated and unique and can create diversity of offerings and values to the category, to consumers. I'm trying to connect with a retail buyer at a retailer, right, at a supermarket. What do they care about, right? What's important to them, right? What is their goal and their mission and their capacity? I would say for a lot of retail buyers, their goal is to create value for their customers, people shopping in the stores. Their goal is to grow their category, grow their set. Their goal is to bring innovation and diversity to their set. And their goal is ultimately to make money in their organization, right? So what is that intersection, right? So for example, I learned a lot around how to better frame my message and my offerings. In the beginning, it was a lot of like the things I care about. This is my mission. This is my community. This is my culture. This is my family. This is why it's important to me, being these farmers, equity, et cetera, et cetera. That is a very important layer. But then at some point in the journey, I started to find that win-win. And I said, this is how we can grow the category together. Because currently on your shelf, you have 30, 50 brands, and you do not have a single offering from the origin of Vietnam. And you do not have a single offering rooted in the Robusta coffee species. Robusta and Arabica are very differentiated for these reasons, more caffeine, more flavor. So it's going to be a differentiated feeling experience for your consumers. So instead of trying to cannibalize and take away from someone else in the set that by offering redundancy in products, we're actually offering something that's literally differentiated, that can grow your category, that can offer your existing consumers something new, and that could potentially bring new consumers to your shelf because now they can find this product on your shelf. So in this way, we can grow the category and you can potentially, if we do well, grow your business, right? So it's really like at the end of the day, TLDR, it's yes, have the will and have the tenacity, but we have to stay open to really listening and learning, because if we want to create value, we have to find that win-win.
But how do you know that they're open to this sort of diverse idea of expansion in their coffee category from Arabica to Robusta? How do we know that the other side is willing to take in what we think is an expansive situation for them?
We don't know. And oftentimes, when you are a first mover and an innovator, the other person on the side, they don't know either. So it is upon us, if you are a leader and a visionary and a pioneer, you have to make people see that and believe that. So for example, when we first entered, plenty of rejections saying, we don't care, Robusta. We'll look at your Arabica offerings. Oh, it's not the right time for Robusta, right? So even though I saw a unique opportunity, many people didn't see it yet. Now, how do we get them there? It doesn't happen overnight. How do we get them there? Constant storytelling. Constant growing the community who believe in this. Showing that proof through our communities on social media, the community engagement, all the press and PR hits. Then all of a sudden, it's not just me saying, hey, Robusta's rising. It's Wall Street Journal saying it. It's New York Times saying it. It's Food and Wine saying it. It's Inc. Magazine saying it. And it's also our community of social media saying it, right? And then you keep, you know, engaging with these buyers or customers over time, even if they don't reply to your email. And then one day they're like, oh, snap, I think something's happening here. I think there's a category expanding here. I think there's a new trend rising here. And then over time, if you, you know, if you do your job well, if you rally the folks and, you know, and maybe if they have an open mind, then you can kind of come to the table and have that first conversation, right?
This is what all business people who are starting out need to hear, and including people who are, who've been at their business and their line of work for 6 years, and they're living on the sort of the edge, the frontiers of their world that they need to expand into, convincing mm-hmm. buyers to buy into to their concept. I mean, this idea is a very basic idea, but it's very I think difficult to execute. You know, especially when you're when we don't have a whole lot of role models. You know, now we do. We have you, and we have what you've already done, what you've rolled out, and we can see it all on your social media. We can see the proof of what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, like, to what your point about, like, convincing buyers of to believe in an innovation, to believe in your idea. You're right. There is a lot of convincing that happens there, because when there is something new and innovative, whether it's Vietnamese coffee or it's like a chili crisp or like an ube spread, right? Buyers, at the end of the day, you know, they want to bring innovation, but they have a boss to respond to too. And it's like, if you bring in an innovation that is truly not maybe desirable to your customers, and if you basically give, like, you know, 12 inches of shelf space, and this 12 inches doesn't return, you know, an ROI, then they've failed in their job as well. So there is, like, yes, a lot of convincing that needs to happen. However, I would say entrepreneurs also need to have, like, a real grasp on what is your product market fit. Do you have product market fit? And if you do, how large is that market? Is your product market fit gonna crush it in one region of 200 stores? Right? And there's certain products that are super niche and premium, beautiful, right? That can probably only survive at a certain scale. And or if you want to be a product or a brand that has nationwide distribution, which is a lot of different customers, a lot of different regions, a lot of different needs and desires of 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 stores, what is, do you have that product market fit, right? And I think founders, entrepreneurs just really need to get really honest with themselves about that. Because I'm not saying if you don't have it yet, maybe there's something that you can change or iterate or evolve to get it, and or maybe you actually don't have it, right?
But how do you even know you have it? I mean, how do you even do the market research to know you have a product market fit? It sounds so nebulous and nuanced.
I mean, I think there are a lot of, like, starting points. I think for one, you know, you just start with, like, your category, right? So let's say, let's say I'll just use my category. So, like, my category is coffee, right? I have a belief that Vietnamese coffee can be a major subcategory as big as matcha, as big as boba, or actually bigger than matcha and boba, because coffee is the second most consumed beverage in the world. Now, beyond my belief, how big is the market, right? Well, you know, the internet will tell you that RTD coffee market in the United States is close to a $12 billion industry, right? And then it's like, okay, so that market is large, but how do I know that, like, people will like Vietnamese coffee or Robusta coffee? What if it's too niche? But I also know that Vietnam is the second largest producer of coffee in the world. And I also know that Vietnam specialized in Robusta. So then there's a question of, like, oh, well, maybe the market doesn't like Robusta. Maybe Robusta's too niche. And I'm like, well, I also know that Robusta is, like, around 40% of the total global coffee production. So I know that this profile is being consumed around the world, and people are actually familiar to this profile. They just don't know it's Vietnamese coffee or Robusta coffee specifically, right? So there's kind of, like, those key data points. I'm like, I know that this product could work because it kind of already exists in different forms, right? Now, maybe I can do another scenario of, like, okay, then you try. I think you can only validate so much with data, because the thing about data is, in the beginning, people would tell me, well, there's no data on Vietnamese coffee or Robusta coffee in the U.S. market, so you don't have a market, right? So there is a little bit of a dance of, like, if you only follow the data, then data reinforces action, the action reinforces data, and then you're in this, like, the cycle, right? So there is a segment of like, well, when you want to innovate, you have to be prepared for no data to affirm what you're doing, but you need enough data points to affirm your conviction, and then you try it, and then you try it again, and you try it again. Once you start trying it, then you have to use your own data to validate if you're moving the right direction or not, right? So for example, so how do you know, right? So how do you know? I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, is your business growing? I think that's a really key indicator of like, how do you know if it's working or not? Because there are plenty of times where, you know, for us, we would hit a wall with something and we'd be like, something isn't working, right? I'll give an example. We've had our beans since 2018, right? We were e-commerce for many years. We had our beans since 2018. We didn't launch into Whole Foods until 2022. Whole Foods, New York, one state. Our beans had so much friction entering the category of packaged coffee. And we had to ask ourselves, why? I'm like, it's so differentiated. It's Vietnamese coffee. It's Robusta. However, when you think about it, the barrier of entry to trying our beans is quite low. So essentially, we can rule out anybody. If you're not going home grinding your own beans, then we've already missed out on a chance to convert you, right? So then we thought, well, how do we get people, how do we convert people to the Vietnamese coffee Robusta experience quicker, easier? So we used data to explore. We exported all of our customer reviews on our website. We had like 90% 5 out of 5 stars, like something is working here. We export our reviews. We analyzed all of our reviews. And the number one keyword that kept coming up was flavor, taste, because it is truly differentiated with the bean. So we said, we need to get people to the flavor experience quicker. They don't have time to grind the beans.
Well,
we have to make the cans. Now, when I was developing this realization that was informed by hypothesis and data, I was like, gosh, but beverage is so brutal. The RTD business is so brutal. Like, can we avoid this?
It's crowded.
It's expensive. It's heavy to ship. It's so hard, Ken. But for us, given our journey in our business where we want to break through really kind of like growing category awareness, this was the lowest friction way to expose people to the Vietnamese coffee Robusta experience. So that led us to this. We developed this in 2022, immediately launched the nationwide Whole Foods 2023, right? So that's just an example of like, how do you find your product market fit? It wasn't quite hitting with the beans because we were hitting a roadblock, but we knew there was still something here. So we had to really reevaluate our strategy. When our strategy led us to a new product line, which is the cans, which helped us unlock a new channel, which is retail, right? Now, that was a very long way of answering this question. Like, how do you know you have product market fit? The answer is you just have to keep trying. If you don't get it right the first time or first couple of times, that's okay. But at the end of the day, if you can have an opportunity to keep growing your offerings and your business, then I think you're onto something. And if you're having a hard time, then something needs to be reevaluated.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's this podcast called Acquired. It's two guys analyzing, they're venture capitalist guys, and they analyze businesses like Hermes, Louis, Microsoft, Nvidia, and they just go deep dive. And it's one of my favorite podcasts. And as you're telling me these details about your business, I'm going like, this is basically what Acquired does, is they talk in detail about the journey. And what I've learned is luck often plays a huge part in a 200-year company. Hermes started as a, you know, a saddlebag company. They did leathers for horse and buggy, you know, carriages. And these shifts, these minor shifts that create these huge pockets of revenue for the companies happen as a result of product market fits that they stumble upon. Mm-hmm. How much of luck and sort of coincidences and space do you give yourself for discovery of a new path in business?
Luck is a big piece of it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sometimes the disheartening piece because you can't control that.
Yeah.
And I say luck is also intertwined with timing, you know? So yeah. I think timing might be a better word here.
Yeah.
For us, like, I truly believe it's the right time to build this business, especially because in our journey, there is such an immense amount of education involved to grow the category awareness in order for our products to thrive, right? We're not playing in a space where the category is fully defined and understood like tomato sauce, right? There's not a learning curve there. So for us, it's like a double challenge of like educating about the category and then we can sell the product, right? Which is so hard to do. So I do think timing is a big piece of it. For us, you know, even when we started in 2018, I'd say we were like barely on time because we faced a lot of resistance because at this time, coffee culture in America was still very, very elitist. It was still very entrenched in like, you know, the attitudes of like third wave specialty, right? We faced a lot of resistance. It's changed a lot. And now I feel like coffee culture in America has become so much more fun and inclusive and dynamic and expressive. Yeah. And over time, you know, I think the timing becomes more clear. Another element where I feel like timing is really opportune for us is that we are also building during this larger macro moment of Asian flavors in America, right? Which we're seeing across CPG products in all categories, in sauces and condiments and noodles and sparkling water and hard seltzer and alcohol, right? It's this larger macro trend of Asian flavors in America. And for that, Vimy's coffee is a part of that moment. Now, if this moment of like this macro moment of Asian flavors in America wasn't happening right now, I do think it would be much more difficult because even in like some of like my pitch presentations to investors, even to retail buyers, I call out the macro trend of Asian flavors in America. I call out the other CBG brands rooted in Asian flavors, Asian culture to show them what's happening across the board, not just in our category. So that's where like this philosophy of a rise and tide lifts all boats is so deeply true because buyers are like in the sauce category, condiment category, they're affirming what's happening in their category. And then like coffee buyers like, oh, that's happening there. It all works together. So timing is quite special right now for anyone building in this space. And so, yeah, timing, because of this timing, there is, even though we faced a lot of resistance on the way, there's, I'd say, arguably more openness to entertain this new path innovation space.
And I love it. How did you get the CEO of Whole Foods to tour your company?
They just reached out on their own. I would say we have been very blessed with our relationship with Whole Foods. They are so wonderful to us. Again, we've been building it since 2019. And so I have a really close relationship with many people in the company at the corporate level where they're buyers or they're in media and PR. And they've been so deeply supportive of us since 2019, like the first ones to take the time to listen right to our story and follow our progress and give us our first shot on shelf. And then, you know, in case folks missed it, I was also a part of like their accelerator in 2022, right? Which kind of puts me in this category of brands that Whole Foods really like support. And so, yeah, honestly, there was no submission process. There was no process. Like someone from the team has reached out like, hey, we're doing this series with Jason, Jason CEO. Like we'd love to interview you. We'd love to have him interview you. Were you guys in a conversation that possible? I'm like, yeah. So that was just, I don't know, luck. That's luck. That's a perfect example of luck right there.
Yeah. Perfect example of luck. I mean, that's a big deal.
Big deal. Oh my gosh. It was probably like, I've done a lot of interviews. I was really nervous for that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at your social media and I'm like, all right, there's a lot of things I track, but like that just looks like hit me in the face like Tyson, you know, just popping me in the jaw. I was like, whoa, that's huge.
Huge, wild. Like, gosh, and he roasted Robusta with me, you know, like we went from for Busta, like, getting no love, and now, like, me showing the CEO of Whole Foods how to roast for Busta.
Now, Whole Foods is owned by Amazon, right?
Yes.
Okay, so does your product, your canned drink RTDs, do they travel in the Amazon space? Do you have it online as well?
Yes, where we sell our cans and our beans and our ground coffee and our brew tools, our feed and filters on Amazon.
And is that separate of the Whole Foods environment, or is that sort of like you have your own distribution going to Whole Foods, to Amazon, and it's not through Whole Foods?
Yeah, correct. So our Amazon storefront is separate. And then we also have, and then Whole Foods, but then we also have Amazon Prime. Wait, sorry. When you order Whole Foods on Amazon, like that is through Whole Foods, but then our Amazon storefront is separate.
Okay, so I asked that because now you're having like all of these things covered. But what I wonder about, because I've interviewed some coffee people in the past year, the actual footprint of having a retail store is a big deal to a lot of these up and coming brands, so they can experience the environment, the thought of the founders and how they approach their coffee. Is that something that you've ever thought about?
What do you mean?
I'm having a retail store.
Oh, I got own brick and mortar.
Yeah, brick and mortar.
Oh my gosh, I get asked this question like at least like once a month. It's crossed my mind for sure because I find that experience so fun. Like you get to really build community on the ground. You get to really present your coffee and Vietnamese coffee culture, the fiend, the way you want to do it. And you know, in the past, we did run like a 3-month pop-up called Cafe Fiend in New York. It was 3 months, 40 hours a week, like a real cafe operation. However, for us, it is not a priority. As much as I would love to do it just for like the pure joy of it, for us, we're really focused on a different channel, which is wholesale retail. And even though I get tempted to have friends sending me like lease listings or like opportunities, I think for me, Ken, it's the really like one of the hardest parts is knowing when to say no.
Yeah.
And just acknowledging that like just because an opportunity presents itself doesn't mean it's the right time for you. And so I've had to really remind myself often, like just stay focused on your core business, like stay focused on your core offerings. Everybody plays a role. There's a chance for everyone to play in this space. Certain people want to choose certain paths or formats more than others. And, you know, we're still pretty small. I think we have a big presence, but we're a very small team. We're only 6 people. We're very lean. We're not VC backed. Like we can't do it all. If you try to do it all, it's just going to crumble. So not anytime soon.
That's the second major takeaway that I'm having today. That first is being patient to just cold email for 2-3 years, and finally you'll have the CEO of Whole Foods in your place. That's the first. The other lesson is to stay focused, and that's a very difficult thing for especially entrepreneurs and artists, you know, because our brains are always creating new opportunities in our mind.
Yeah.
And the ability to kind of put the brakes on the new quote-unquote opportunities, mm-hmm. because those things actually kill us in the long run. Mm-hmm. And the ability to kind of discern where the true focus needs to be is in itself a priceless gift that you have.
Thank you, Ken. It definitely took some time to get here. And then one thing that I've learned in this process as well is like, aside from having all these really exciting ideas that I think in general would do well in the world, if you take a hard look at your business, your P&L, your team, your resources, there's a real question of like, can you pull this off well with the team and the resources that you have right now? I've caught myself actually trying to maybe put too much on the team because I'm like, we got to do it all. And I've actually had to actively pull back on certain decisions and certain roadmaps because I was just noticing that we weren't ready as a company, right? Like I felt like I was probably putting too much on the team right now. Like if we want to achieve this vision, I have to support the whole team with more resources, you know? So yeah, vision idea aside, just taking a hard look at like, do you have enough resources, money, team, bandwidth to execute this well? Because if you don't, then it's probably not the right time.
And when you're rolling out in different stores and different box stores, Do you need additional resources to do that? Or is it really just sort of sweat equity and, you know, elbow grease that you're just kind of like, now you're just doing the same thing, but just into more markets?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say to a certain point, yeah, like, you know, so currently we're in like over 2,100 doors. We have, our distribution network is over 30 distribution centers, right? So just think about the logistics of that. There's a lot of logistics to get product to these 30 plus DCs that then go out to these different stores. It's a lot of POs to fulfill. So I'd say over the last year and a half, our operations team has grown more to support the wholesale business. But I'd say it's after doing D2C for like 4+ years and we're still doing it, I'd say it's relatively more efficient, the wholesale channel, than D2C. Because D2C, it's like you're working so hard and like, you know, creating all these resources and assets to like acquire one customer at a time. Whereas a wholesale, yes, there's a lot of work that goes into it. There's a lot of upfront investment, but you can unlock, you know, a couple hundred doors at a time. So I'd say like we've been able to go from like from basically from like last year to right now. So like last 12 months, we've only hired like one additional operations assistant. Everything else, the team is the same. Yeah.
Because now it's just scaling, right? It's just scaling. leveraging, you know, probably software or leveraging different relationships that can kind of leverage on their own in their own environment, and instead of doing one customer at a time.
Yes, exactly.
Now, you go back and forth to Vietnam quite a bit. And, you know, the 50th year anniversary of Vietnam's, you know, on one side it's independence, on the other side it's the fall of Saigon. It's so tricky. And you and I are people that are right in the middle of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious that to know, is this something that you encounter in your work, going back and forth to Vietnam, the sentiment on the ground in Vietnam versus the sentiment in the communities that you live in the United States? You know, as the 50th year approaches, are we getting closer? Are we getting further apart, in your opinion?
From where I'm sitting and in the spaces that I navigate, I feel like we're getting closer. You know, I feel like from what I can see, you know, like first of all, my dad's whole side of the family is from Hanoi. So we have a different sentiment in a lot of ways. My mom's side is from Central. So I kind of get a little bit of both, but it's unlike some of my friends who maybe, like, I've heard from some of my friends, my Vietnamese friends, where, like, if their family's from the South, they had a certain perspective. They're totally like, we would never go back, right? So my experience has always been different since, you know, I was young. But, yeah, from where I'm, like, the spaces I'm navigating, I feel like with technology, with the internet, with just, like, growing, like, economic opportunities, like, there's so many startups in Vietnam now. There's a lot of, like, outside investment from other countries going into Vietnam. And it's such a dynamic space. I feel like through technology, through investments, through startup culture, and through the internet, I feel like we're getting closer in a lot of ways. So, and like, even when I talk to younger folks who live in Vietnam, who work in media, also media companies now in Vietnam, is, I feel like Vietcetera is a great example. Like, they've really generated a lot of content to kind of help folks feel closer to Vietnam, even if they've never been there. I think it's getting, I feel like it's getting closer, and I, for the path that I see, I think it's going to continue to merge, especially with the younger generation finding new opportunities to find alignment and find a ways to uplift all of our interests and all of our communities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you bring up a really good company. Vietcetera, you know, is run by Hao, who's a Vietnamese American. Mm-hmm. He's doing a great job. You're right. Bridging the two and, you know, doing it very, very well, mm-hmm. doing it in a way where we don't get the ick when it comes to the political discussion, or, you know, it's really about these superstars that are coming out, especially like Have a Sip with Thuy Minh, mm-hmm. from that Vietcetera podcast. She's doing a really good job talking to people who are really putting their imprint in the world globally, from rappers to business people.
Yeah, no, it's great. Yeah, I love how like their content and like their stories, it's really global. It's like the Vietnamese diaspora globally.
Yeah. Beautiful work that they're doing over there, Vietcetera. Running a business is, you know, the cliche is like it's a marathon. It's definitely a marathon. And you're on your sixth year right now, it sounds like. Yeah. What keeps you going? I know that there's so many challenges that we're not even talking about, but what keeps you going? And I know you brought up the why earlier, but I mean, when things get really dark and tough, what gets you to the next finish line?
It's so hard. You know, like year six, like everything people talk about, like founders doing year five, year six, it's so real because you're fucking tired.
Yeah,
and
you're beat down.
You're tired. And going from year one to five is very different from year five to 10. Yeah. My job has changed a lot, but also like my mental and emotional bandwidth has also changed a lot because now I'm thinking about much larger problems and much larger challenges. Like year five to 10 is very different. What got us here will not get us to year 10. So I've really definitely been stretching.
What do you mean by that? What got us here is not what's going to get us to what do you, can you break that statement down?
What got us here won't get us here.
Yeah, just pure muscle is not going to get you from 5 to 10.
No,
right?
Yeah,
because 1 to 5 is
because 5 to 10 the stakes are higher. I now have 5 full-time employees, 6 including myself. Stakes are higher, right? We're dealing with six-figure POs, right? Six-figure invoices, right? We can't really afford to make mistakes. And if we do, the mistakes are bigger and in the stakes are higher. That's what I mean, right?
Yeah.
We have people who have families and kids on our payroll, right? So it's not just me in my apartment, not just me and Eric's in the roastery anymore, you know? So and then, you know, growing from like zero to 100K is different from growing from like 10 to 50 million. What does that require? You know, like how many more cans does that require? How many more doors does that require? How many more like dollars does that require? Then where do you get those dollars? Everything is just bigger. The growth is bigger. The door count's bigger. The banners are bigger. All the headlines we see are great. But then the challenges are bigger too. And the problems are bigger. And the things you need to do to get there, it just gets harder. That help?
Yeah. It's depressingly similar in every industry.
Every industry.
It's just, it's a tough, and I think I can imagine from 10 to 15 years, it's another animal, right?
Yeah.
It's just a whole nother nightmare. And probably another type of benefit payout structure that we can only imagine too.
If that is your choice, yeah, that's why we choose this, right? So I think like to that point, I think just for any founders on a journey, I think it's getting really clear on what you want your outcome to be and then reverse engineering that to the business you want to build is very important. I think a lot of founders, including myself, when I started, I was like, I have no clue what kind of outcome I want. Am I going to build this forever? Am I just going to work forever? Do I want to exit? Like, I wasn't thinking about that. And I think in a lot of ways, like really passion-driven founders don't think about that. But at some point in the journey, it's very important to get clear on what kind of business, what kind of outcome you want to have, what kind of business you want to build, and then you can determine how you want to get there. But to answer your question earlier of like, you know, it gets challenging, it gets harder, like, well, how do I move through it? I would say as challenging as it's been, I'd say we've been having a very, very blessed year. Having a great year in retail. So the wins help, you know, like the wins help, you know, the announcements help, the authorizations help. Those help because it's kind of like we're doing something right. Like we're doing something right. Yes, it's hard, but we're doing something right. The world is giving us this feedback. We're getting these authorizations. We're getting growth opportunities. Like we're doing something right. We've got to keep going, right? That's one. That helps a lot. But let's say if we don't have that, I think having conviction, like, I still had conviction in my purpose and my mission. And like that is always affirming, even if it's not like a retail win, if it's like someone saying like, gosh, like I feel so seen from your company, or like, I think it's incredible how you're like elevating Vietnamese coffee. Or like, it's amazing how you're really disrupting this industry. Like even those like qualitative, like those wins, I think are also huge sources of motivation. And I think the last piece I'll say here, like what keeps me going is, you know, at this point, of in my journey, like approaching year six, I feel like I have more and more clarity around what I'm building and how I'm building, right? Whereas I feel like a lot of like years, like 1 to 4 is like, WTF am I doing? Like, where is this going? Like, how do I get there? Like, I really was like clueless in so many ways. But my motivation at the time was like, just keep putting one foot in front of the other, one foot in front of the other. You don't have to know it all, which I still believe in for many early stage rounds. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other. It will come to you. But now, again, like that doesn't work for year 5 to 10. I can't just keep putting one foot in front of the other. I have to know what it looks like from year 5 to 10.
Yeah.
Or at least like, you know, 2 to 3 years out and then have a plan. And so I think having like really dialing in on that planning, leveraging the past, historical data, market data, and then kind of like having clarity on like where we want to go, how we want to get there, really helps kind of push through the hard times.
And lastly, what's in store for the next year?
Next year. Next year, you know, we really want to continue on our retail momentum, our retail journey. You know, this year we launched in Target, Sprouts, GoPuff. We announced HEB recently. And the goal is the same. It's to become a household brand. It's to make Vietnamese coffee a staple in American coffee culture. And we want to do that through, one, offering more products and more experiences so people can experience Vietnamese coffee in a multitude of ways, as well as increasing our distribution and reach.
This last year, I've been in at least 3 different stores, and I can't remember exactly which stores I was in, but I'm with my daughter and my son, and we walk through the cold section of the cans, and I point to them every single time because they have that's their last name, and they are blown away every single time that there's a can on the shelf mm-hmm. with their last name. And it, you know, I wanted to end this conversation with telling you how thankful I am, mm-hmm. both for having the cans on the shelf that reads, you know, Vietnamese, mm-hmm. and for you to, you know, check in and spend time with me on the podcast every year. And I feel so much gratitude towards you. So thank you so much for doing the work that you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Kenneth. And thank you for sharing your platform with me many, many times.
Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.